Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin, and I am thrilled to share with you information about resiliency, well-being, performance, education, business, parenting, and everything in between. I'm committed to joining you each week to talk about these big ideas and bring them into action, habits, tools, strategies, tactics that allow us to finally uncover what it takes to truly be well. And I'm just so excited that you're here. Hello and welcome back. I'm just so glad that you are here. Now, today we're going to dive into a concept. It's one of the barriers as we continue this conversation on the barriers of resiliency around the notion of stigma. Now, stigma is like, it is so destructive in so many people's lives. I think it's so interesting if we first I just get myself all like worked up even thinking about it, because I just have seen how stigma just grips people and just really it gets in the way of them living like big, bold, beautiful lives and confidently being able to like embrace a lot of parts of themselves. So we're going to chat about stigma. We're going to kind of do a deep dive, like where it comes from, what purpose does it serve if it does, and like how do we move past some of the stigma that is put upon us and how we can kind of rewrite some of those narratives. So today we're going to talk about all things stigma. And again, I can only share within the realm of my expertise and my lived experience. I appreciate stigma means things to different people. And again, there's even lots of privilege in how I talk about stigma that I've experienced. But ultimately, this is to educate. It's just to raise awareness and help us understand that if we want to be truly well, we got to make sure that we get ahead of some of these concepts. So first of all, the word stigma, it actually comes from like the origins from this kind of Greek idea about like marking or tattooing. It means that like somebody was like this brand was put upon them. So people know that they were like what they used to call morally polluted. How awesome is that? Morally polluted. Just think of all the things that we do today that, you know, at, you know, different times in history would have considered been like morally polluted type things. Fascinating concept. Anyway, but the idea is that they were marking somebody because there was something about them that was different, something about them that perhaps the norm didn't like, or it was a way to put power and control over certain types of people. So it's a way of branding or marking. Now, there are so many different forms of stigma. There's obviously societal stigma. We see stigma in terms around like mental health, emotional health. It's just remarkable how many like stigma kind of pieces that people believe to be true and carry them forward. Now, my first kind of experience with stigma was as a student who struggled. As a student who really struggled and was identified, had to be in like remedial classes in elementary school, the group who had to get pulled out of mainstream education classes and then get brought to this like room for special help, extra help, it was incredibly stigmatizing, okay? Because you were being kind of removed from general population to be put in this area. And there wasn't a lot of discussion at that time about like why these kids were leaving the class or why these kids didn't have to do certain subjects. And again, it just created a lot of like misconceptions about like what was happening. And like, I remember one time being in like grade 3 and somebody got mad because I came back after getting some extra help. And we were doing like a little in-class assignment. And because of the extra help I was just given, like I understood what the actual assignment was. And I came back and I did the assignment really well. And I'm always the kid who was like at the bottom of the class. But this one time I knew what I was doing. And they were like, I knew it. I knew that they would give the answers. This is what the other child said, that they said they knew that I got the answers given to me in that little secret room. But I had somebody to explain something to me so I could understand it. So I remember my learning disabilities very much being this first time where I felt like I was othered, like this idea that I was separated. And again, I hear often when, talking to families and groups about how, like, hearing your child be given an LD, a learning disability diagnosis, is like so upsetting because it's this idea that this EAP, this educational assessment plan, is going to follow year after year. And, people are just going to, think you're not very bright, which is absolutely not the case whatsoever, but people are worried about it. Mental health is another area which there's so much stigma that surrounds that. And all of these ideas get in the way of us being truly well. I remember having this like remarkable moment where this woman I was working with, her daughter had been diagnosed with a mental health condition, and she was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And the mother was just gutted. And she said to me, she's like, "I wish it would have been cancer." And I was just a student at the time, but I just remember being in this like this, co-op or placement or residency, whatever you want to call it, and just like looking at this woman being like, how you just wished a disease on your child. Like, I just didn't understand it. But the more that I saw how people were treated with schizophrenia, how people treated the family once their daughter had that diagnosis. It's like you can appreciate that there is just so much misinformation out there. And, I actually, even in some of my writing, I've talked about the fact that when there's a cancer diagnosis, people show up with casseroles. When there's a mental health diagnosis, especially something like schizophrenia, people aren't showing up with casseroles. Like, people are like distancing themselves. So there's a lot of different, again, these stigma live and are represented in so many different places. Again, there's also so many stigmas around, like, how much space you take up in terms of the size of your body and, the color of your hair, the skin color, tone color, like the vehicle you drive, what school your kids go to. Like, it is like relentless how much of these like pressures of social norms get put on people. Now, I think it's a little bit useful to at least pause and understand where does this come from in terms of like having to like categorize people. And it kind of taps into these notions of like heuristics, how we can make assumptions with the goal of just trying to be able to make quick decisions, right? So the brain doesn't want to have to like process every new piece of information every single time it has an encounter. So it naturally clusters information when it can. And there's a component of our like survival required, right? So, like, for example, like our brain from an evolutionary perspective had to learn that like there are certain furry creatures that we do not pet. There are certain furry creatures that we don't bring inside the cave. Because again, we had to like learn these fear responses to understand, these are things that aren't safe for us. But what happens as society takes over and a lot of misunderstandings, misinformation, and fear of the unknown are like biological tendency of clustering and othering for survival becomes just social currency. It becomes this like social capital that uses this kind of idea of us versus them. So there was like a seed of it starting for like a decent reason from an evolutionary perspective. But like long term, obviously, it has like horrible consequences for people. Now, it's also interesting too. I remember as a student learning about how, even like in the medical system, obviously there's so much stigma. So, for example, the research shows that like persons that are being treated for lung cancer receive the most abysmal care compared to people being treated with other forms of cancer, because there's this like stigma or this belief that somebody who has lung cancer like brought it on themselves from smoking. Even though that, like, yes, obviously smoking causes cancer, but there's like a bunch of ways that you can develop lung cancer. Yet people who were treating people who were being treated with lung cancer, actually they experienced a lot more stigmatization than other forms of cancer, which again, it's just quite interesting when you think of how all of this goes. So my gentle invitation, when we think about this idea of the stigma, if you think about it from the perspective, it's meant to separate us. It's meant to like kind of keep us away from like the group or the norm or that like 33% in the middle. And then there's all these outliers on the outside. My gentle invitation is to obviously like recognize what type of like labels that have been put upon us And then think about strategies in terms of like, how do we work with it and not allow it to like become part of our identity or be the biggest component of our identity? So here's another example. I am somebody who was diagnosed with ADHD. Of course, not when I was little, because heck, they didn't know what it was back then, especially young girls. But when I received my diagnosis of ADHD, all of a sudden it was like this, it was a label, 100%. And it was like this like deep sense of relief that finally put context, or at least like an idea behind why I felt so othered the majority of my life. So when I looked at the diagnosis criteria and the symptoms of what my ADHD looked like, and somebody basically said, "Oh, look at all of these symptoms. We put this together, and this is what we know the experience of somebody with ADHD is like, for example, in education, in the work environment, in relationships." I felt so seen for like the first time in my life, where all of a sudden it wasn't like this character flaw or being morally polluted. It really was the way my brain interprets the world. And I remember the first time when somebody explained to me that because of the nature of my ADHD, again, which is a label, but it was a label that brought me so much understanding, self-compassion was increasing, and just appreciation for how my brain worked, was when somebody explained it to me around the sensitivity to criticism and rejection. I remember being little, like kindergarten, and if like I was like rejected for some reason, or let's say, I had a friend and they wanted to go play with another friend and I was not, didn't have anyone to play with at recess or somebody to sit beside, it like was this like visceral, painful reaction, where like the next kid I think would just go play with somebody else. Whereas to me, it just was like it hurt in my bones. Like I remember when I would be given feedback, even like little error detection corrections in school, and I was given feedback, that criticism literally felt like 1,000 paper cuts. I just felt like I was being skinned alive, and I felt like everyone was watching and judging. And it was like I was so hypersensitive to feedback. And again, I thought I just maybe wasn't very resilient, or I wasn't very strong. It's like, no, the way the brain perceives it, it's like a deeper, harder feeling than to the average bear. And I always knew I was hypersensitive to feedback. And again, I thought it was just me until I understood and learned that because of this label that they call ADHD, a clusters of symptoms, this is actually a thing. The other one was time blindness, right? Like I can give myself 90 minutes to get ready. I can give myself 10 minutes to get ready. And it doesn't matter how much time, I will literally be at the absolute like last possible second all the time, right? So even if I give myself plenty of time, so let's say I'm like, oh, I got an event. So I'm going to like go upstairs. I'm doing a virtual event. I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to give myself like 50 minutes to get ready, even though it only takes me 20 minutes to get ready. I will literally find like other things to do when I walk into that space, not on purpose. I'll find other things to do until I literally just push it to the last second. And then it's like, then it's a panic. It's crisis. Hurry, go, go, go. Because the time blindness is something that I'm not very good at managing how the time works yet. I've never missed a flight. I figure it out. But the last few seconds, as that clock is ticking down, it's not fun. Like it doesn't feel good. And it seems like, but that's just the way I show up in the world. But so do other people who also have this type of neurodiversity. And it is so affirming to know, again, this isn't you. It's like, it's just this assortment or a way of helping us understand it. Now, there are so many other ADHD symptoms that I can explore here with you, but essentially, what I do want to share here is that the stigma that the world is out, that is, exists in the world, it's meant to separate, it's meant to divide, it's meant to like basically like tarnish or like show that this person is like abnormal, right? This person is not in the center of that bell curve. But I tell you, it doesn't have to preclude us having big, bright, beautiful lives, especially when we think about what it takes to be truly well. It's working with all of the different parts. And I really encourage you, I really, really encourage you just to take notice if there's some like, old narratives that you might be carrying around about yourself that might not be serving you anymore, right? Things that maybe somebody told you and that you believe to be true, that you've instead of just observing, you absorbed it. And you might not even recognize that you're letting this stuff hold you back. Another example. Okay. So for somewhere along the line, I had picked up this narrative that I was very irresponsible with money. And I don't really I didn't have a lot of evidence that I was irresponsible with money, except the fact that for whatever reason, I was just the irresponsible, reckless teenager. And somehow that carried into this money story. And then I recall having a chance to talk to persons in the financial field. I have some amazing humans that I get to hang out with in the financial world. And when we started to demystify and unpack my financial story, my money story that I used to tell myself, I realized that there was enormous amounts of stigma that was impacted in that. As in, for example, people with EAP, an educational assistance plan that or an IEP, individualized education plan, that we're not supposed to be successful, that we're not very good at regular stuff like money. But my friends, it is not true. It is not valid. We might not feel at times that we're very good at certain things, but that doesn't mean we are not good at certain things. They're just these narratives and simplifications that we pick up as we move forward, as we navigate our big lives, but we don't need to let that hold us back. So again, just take a moment to think about some of the kind of stories or narratives that you carry. How were they perhaps? Where do they come from? Are they serving you anymore? Is there any that you might want to just let go of? Whatever those might be. And my invitation is that for every kind of stigma or piece of a label that you carry, I promise you there's an example somewhere of someone who's been able to dismantle it. And so look for examples. Look for examples in the world. Find those kind of little hope beacons that we do not have to be defined by these things. That, me, for example, I remember, that stigma of being a high school dropout, right? Doesn't feel great to be labeled a high school dropout. Yet now when they present my work and they introduce me on stage and they're like, "Hey, she went from high school dropout to professor." You know what? I'm so proud of that comeback story. I'm so proud that I've been able to create accessible routes for other people to see education differently. And I've been able to do that because I've been there. I had that experience. And I never, ever, ever, this is one of my things that get me super cheesed, is when somebody says, "Oh, you did it. So that means if I did it, so that means you can do it." You hear that a lot, especially in the personal development world. It's like, "Oh, just because I did it, that means you can do it." I don't want to ever, ever, ever come across as trying to suggest that message. What I really hope to do and why I want to be of service and how I want to be of service is to share, you know what? These are things that were part of my story, and there's ways of overcoming them. And every situation is different. Everybody's experiences are unique to their perspective, but it means that hope exists. So not like I did it, so you can do it. It's like, no. Solutions are possible. Comebacks are realities for people. And creating our own forward momentum to chase those big, bright, beautiful futures, that's what I want to encourage people to find, that you have this capacity and you're so well resourced to figure out what your future is going to look like. And my last little kind of moment in terms of imagining that future, not being held back by this, again, these labels or the stigma. And I recall first hearing about this story in one of David Goggins' books. I'm pretty sure it was You Can't Hurt Me. And he talks about this idea of getting to heaven or the afterlife or whatever you want to call it, and being sat down and a book was shown to him or to the person who just died. And it showed them absolutely everything that they could become. Okay, so imagine you get to heaven and it's like, here is a book of your possibilities and potential. This is what was available to you in your lifetime if you showed up, if you believed in yourself, if you had faith in your abilities. And he talked about, imagine reading this and realizing you could have had this, or you could have been here, or you could have had that experience, or you could have helped somebody. And then realizing you didn't allow yourself to meet your potential because of something that was holding you back. And that holding you back might have been the stigma. It could have been a limiting belief, or maybe even just like somebody else's interpretation of who you are and what you're all about. So imagine, I want you to again, perhaps use this as an exercise for yourself, right? Next time you're just having a moment, and instead of like scrolling and chasing some of that dirty digital dopamine, which tastes so good in between meetings, instead of doing that, I want you to just pause and I want you to imagine what is the like boldest thing that could be in that book that's available to you. And just take a second to imagine like what that would feel like if you got there and it's like, oh, you know what? You could have had this, Robin, but you didn't because you let this label of ADHD get in the way. Or you let this idea that you were a single mom get in the way of you having the most amazing relationship with your three teenagers. Or imagine you stayed in a super secure job because you thought that was the best choice, and instead you never got to experience what my last 5 years of my life have been thus far. So think about that for yourselves. And then when you like just see that, imagine it, my invitation for you is to like fight for the things that will give you the biggest sense of meaning and purpose in your life, even if those labels, those stereotypes, that stigma is around you. Like literally use that as kindling to burn down those bridges and like go after whatever it is that is in your heart. Because that dream, that wish, that belief in your heart is there for a reason, and it deserves to be shared in the world. So, my friends, stigma, it is real. I welcome any questions, curiosities, or wonderments that you might have for me on this. I am so appreciative that we're able to like have this place and this space to talk about these big ideas. And I just want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me. And if you want to hear more about this stuff, just let us know. Please reach out on socials. We'd love to hear from you, and I want to help. And if I can be of service, that's what this is all about. Thank you for your time. Take good care. And I look forward to connecting with you next time. Bye for now. Thank you for spending time with this podcast episode today. I hope you found something helpful in Resiliency Redefined. Please feel free to share it with somebody who you might think could benefit. Maybe there was something useful, something in particular that you think you could pay forward. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcast. It means the world to me. And again, thanks for your time. Thank you for your interest. Take good care, and I'll see you next time.